that's right. The numbers here don't come back.
I thought it wasn't until I did this
the numbers don't track. Yeah, they track to this, which doesn't want to point track to and I think there's
kind of funny, no matter what I do, I really just think it's really funny.
There's no on and off button.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I got it down.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you could begin to take your seats, we'll get started here in just a minute or so.
That's right. You work together. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. That's right.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I'd like to welcome you all to a meeting of the California Ocean Protection Council. My name is Mike Christman, Secretary for Resources for California, and I serve as Chair of the Council. Let me begin today by doing a number of things. One, I'm ask if you would to turn off your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Turn them off or put them on the vibrate mode if you would. And then those of you who wish to speak, I think you know, as we oftentimes we do at all of these meetings, we've got speaker cards in the back of the room. If you'd fill them out prior to your time and give them up to Sam and folks up here at the table, we would appreciate it. Let me first welcome Council co-member of the Ocean Protection Council, Linda Adams, is our new Secretary for CalEPA. Linda, it's great having you with us. Congratulations on your appointment, and look forward to many years of activities on the council here.
Thank you very much, Secretary Christman and Mr. Chairman. I'm very happy to be here today, and I understand a tremendous amount of work has been done in a short period of time, and I'm very much looking forward to moving forward on this issue.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Linda. Nice having you with us. Cindy Ehrenberg is here from Controller Wessler's office. Cindy, nice having you with us. Legislative representatives, Assemblymember Nava and Bill Craven representing Sheila Kuehl's office, neither of whom are going to be able to be here today. I understand the Assembly is in session, and Bill is working on feverishly to try to get ready for the next 3 weeks of legislative hearings and all that goes with it. And we certainly understand that. We'll miss them both in the deliberations today. I'd like also to take the opportunity now to introduce a new face in our activities here in the Ocean Protection Council. Many of you already have known Drew in his past lives. He's had many in these areas of oceans and oceans policy. Drew Bohan is over here. Drew, if you raise your hand. Drew is our new Executive Policy Officer for the Ocean Protection Council. Drew is the one that's going to be tasked with thinking about Ocean Protection Council 24/7 and working with Sam and the very able staff at the Coastal Conservancy, working with Brian on our staff at the agency, and Linda and all and Cindy and all of the folks involved in the work of the Ocean Protection Council. And Brian, it's great to have you on board, Drew, and we look forward to your comments. We'll let you. You're going to make some comments as you introduce your strategic plan. So we'll our strategic plan. So we'll just hold your comments off to then, if we might. Let me start the meeting by making a few opening remarks, if I might. First, let me recognize today that everybody hold your breath on this one, okay? Let me recognize today that President Bush has designated June 4th through 10th as National Oceans Week, and today is National Oceans Day. Now, how many of you knew that? Look at this. Very good. I am impressed. That's great. I want to, Warner Chabot, Warner, can you lead us in the song? There's got to be some kind of National Oceans song or something, isn't there? Yes. That's great. We wanted to make sure we recognize that. In addition, today is also World Oceans Day, which was, I'm told, created in 1992 at the Earth Summit down in Rio. Although not yet officially designated by the United Nations, there's obviously a number of events and activities around the country. We'll not only today, but certainly next week. Next week, many of you know, some of you I'm sure are going to be involved, is National Oceans Week in Washington. I'm going to be in Washington a good part of next week, doing some testifying, participating before Congress, participating in a number of the activities. We're going to be, I'm going to be speaking to the State and Federal Coastal Coordination Committee back there, going to be testifying before the Joint Oceans Commission Initiative, also going to be testifying on Capitol Hill before the National Oceans Policy Study Committee, and a number of other activities that are going to highlight oceans and oceans policy. Our efforts, my counterpart from Massachusetts, is going to be there, and he and I are going to be not only testifying but working hard to try to remind people that we've got to get oceans issues higher on the priority list, not only with the Bush administration but in Congress. We're going to be working very hard to continue to try to do that. As most of you know, we've been working very hard to try to make that happen, not only through the work here at the Ocean Protection Council. We've got a Western Governors Association is meeting next week in Sedona, Arizona. We have a resolution that essentially mirrors, substantively mirrors our California Ocean Action Plan. So the Western Governors Association is going to be going on record supporting that and urging national moving these issues higher on the priority list. And so it's all kind of coming together over these next few weeks. So stay tuned. I know many of you will be in Washington, be with us next week in Washington on those activities. And again, we appreciate your support and help in that. I think if you've looked at the agenda, we have quite a complete agenda today, a lot going on. We're going to start out with the discussion of our operating policy, which the staff has prepared for our consideration. We're also considering a strategic plan for this organization. I think most of you know who are involved in the creation of the Ocean Protection Council that the creation of a strategic plan was laid out in the enabling legislation. Very good work has been done by Neil Fisherman and Sam and others on the Conservancy staff and Brian on our staff, with the help of late Mike Weber from Resources Legacy Fund and others, been very helpful in getting the strategic plan where it is today. We had a hearing. I think we took some public comment, I think, at the last council meeting, which was all very helpful, and we really appreciate that. So we're going to be spending some time on that today, because that's very, very important activity. Other items on our agenda today is issues surrounding the Oceans Observation System, marine protected areas, water quality protection projects, the Public Ocean Awareness Campaign, seafloor mapping, ocean aquaculture environmental review, sustainable fishery strategies briefing, state and federal update briefing, and a sea otter mortality briefing. So we've got a lot on the agenda today. There's a lot on it. The number of action items that we're going to be asked to consider. So we'll be moving through it relatively expeditiously. Most of you also know that we've scheduled a California and Rural Oceans Conference in September in Long Beach, California Rural Oceans 06. We've had, I'm told, a very outstanding response to our request for papers. Over 400 abstracts have been received in getting ready for the conference. The council will also open the conference down there. The speakers will be Leon Panetta, former congressman from this area in California, former White House chief of staff, and former chair of the Pew Oceans Commission, Admiral Jim Watkins, who is the chairman of the U.S. Commission on Ocean Policy. You know, I might also, those of you who know Admiral Watkins, he's very ill right now. He's actually home. He's having some heart trouble. I sent him a note the other day. I'm going to hopefully visit with him when I'm in Washington. Just an outstanding gentleman. Hopefully he's on the mend. Hopefully he'll be able to participate with us in down in Long Beach when we're there. So if any of you who know him would like to send him a card, I think it would be well received. Congressman Sam Farr and Sylvie Earle and Jean-Michel Cousteau are also going to be participating in our efforts down in Long Beach. We expect that the conference will be a sellout, so I suggest early on to get to the website, get signed up for it. One of the other things we're going to talk about today is we've had previous conversations about granting a voting proxy for members of the council. We'll also talk about that early on in our agenda today. Anybody have any comments before we get started? Any of the council members or anything? Linda or Cindy, anything? Okay. Okay, we'll move next to the agenda then. First item on the agenda is consideration of adoption, possible adoption of the operating policy for the meetings. Sam?
Good morning, Chairman Christman and members of the council. Sam Schuchat, Secretary of the Council and Executive Officer of the State Coastal Conservancy. Nice to be with you here in Monterey. In light of the fact that it is Oceans Day and Oceans Week, your staff will be retiring to the Tiki Bar in Pacific Grove this evening. So
that's very appropriate.
All invited to join us there. It turns out that one of our staff, Marina Cazorla, is a tiki devotee, and she
really
found the place for us to go tonight. So that's the plan.
Do you have a sign-up sheet somewhere?
There's a sign-up sheet. Will be circulated.
Okay, good.
This item has been the subject of several discussions at the last couple of council meetings, and we're here today to recommend operating procedures for you to adopt. And then if you adopt those procedures, the next item would be to for the two voting members of the council here to vote to allow Ms. Ehrenberg to vote today on items representing Controller Wesley. Our recommendations, which are in the packet for the council, consist of the following. One is that you agree that a quorum of the council shall consist of at least two voting members of the council for purposes of taking action. However, the council can hold or continue to hold a hearing with at least one voting member present, and this would allow you to continue the meeting if two voting members have to leave, or it would also allow council members to have hearings on special items outside of council meetings. Secondly, we're recommending that you adopt a procedure that allows council members to delegate their authority to others for an individual meeting, and that vote has to indicate the scope of the proxy's power to vote. That is, you have to say that they can vote on all matters or only on certain matters or whatever. Much to our surprise, very few boards, departments, and commissions actually ever formally adopt Robert's Rules of Orders. Our suggestion is that you agree to operate informally, but that if it looks like you know, you're coming to blows, that you then adopt Robert's Rules and that they guide the discussion. And John Gurish has and will bring to every meeting Robert's Rules. They're quite extensive and cover any possible contingency. We recommend that the State Coastal Conservancy, the Resources Agency, and the State Water Quality Control Board adopt a statement of incompatible offices, incompatible activities for the Ocean Protection Council, because those are the agencies that are providing staff for the council. And if any other agencies in the future provide staff for the council, they would need to adopt a similar incompatible activity statement, and that's on your disc and in your binders. And finally, the council, in this resolution, the council would establish a committee, a science advisory committee, and then leave open to the future the possibility of establishing other committees on an ad hoc basis as you need them.
Okay.
So that's the recommendation for this item, and if you agree and adopt all of this, then the next thing to do would be to vote to allow Ms. Ehrenberg to have Controller Wesley's proxy for okay. this meeting, and I'm
happy to answer any questions. Yeah, we want to talk a little bit about that before we do that. I think we're inclined to want to do that today, but I think we've had some extensive conversation about the need for and why we haven't had proxies up till now, and why we think now is probably a good time to begin that process, and so. Mm-hmm. So we have before us adoption of the council's operating procedures. I really don't have any questions about them. Linda, do you have any questions at all about
I just would like to clarify, Sam, that we will not be adopting the incompatible activities statement today, but that's something that we're still working on, correct? Or do we actually have that statement? I see a sample, but...
The incompatible activities
or is that
would be adopted by the agencies that provide staff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And that would be the State Water Board Resources Agency and
the
Coastal Conservancy.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And it is in the packet. And that has been duly noted. Okay. Any other questions? Cindy, do you have any questions at all about
it? Yeah, I just had one little bit of input. I wanted to say that you've been, the chairman has been very inclusive and congenial and has sought our office's input on matters that were your prerogative in the past. And so with this particular agenda item with appointment of committee members, we'd appreciate it if you'd continue the great process that you'd had to date.
Sure. You bet.
Mr. Chairman,
is mm-hmm.
that motion
we're ready.
In order?
Yes.
Okay. I move to adopt the resolution.
Okay. Item number two, consideration of the possible adoption of operating policies and the incompatible statement.
Can I second it also?
No, I'll have to second it. That's right. I'll second it. all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. All right. Let's go on then to the
Mr. Chairman, if I could, before
yes.
going to the next item, just two other things you might want to consider. Well, one thing for the meeting and one thing to consider for the future. As you know, we have a contract with AGP Video to webcast these meetings, and I think under public comment, Steve Matthew is going to show some of the latest and greatest technology that they bring to the table here. At this meeting and at future meetings, AGP has a document reader. So if people, members of the public or other agencies, bring documents that they want to discuss at the meeting, we can put the document up on the screen and webcast it. And as you may recall, at our last meeting, we had a document that there weren't enough copies for, and there was some tensions in the audience over that issue. So we now have the ability to show documents that people bring to the meetings if
Great.
They don't bring enough copies. You might want to consider down the road a resolution making the video record of the meeting the official minutes of the meeting. The Fish and Game Commission has done this with the
Commission has adopted.
Yeah,
they've adopted.
The Commission has done this, and you guys might want to think about
That's
doing that
idea.
Because, as Steve will demonstrate, we now have the ability to essentially tag the broadcast record of the meeting to the agenda, so you don't have to go through the whole broadcast to find particular items. You can use the agenda to guide you through the video record. So you might want to consider that, and that would be something that we could do at a future meeting as a part of your operating procedures.
Great. I like that. Thank you, Sam. Next is a consideration resolution, and again, it's been formally noticed. Resolution of our council on, let's see, where do I have it here? I don't have the, I thought I had it here.
It's a meeting procedure.
I don't have the resolution.
It's not the meeting.
Well, actually, it's the, I'm sorry, it's the granting proxy for the council members. Do we have a document?
There is no document for this item because we didn't know who or what we would be doing.
Okay. Yeah, no, I hear you. No, that, and that's fair.
But it's been agendized.
That's fair. It has been agendized. Let me start by suggesting an action. And Sam, help me here because you and I have talked a little bit about this. I think all of you remember when the council began. One of the early on, we had a request to designate proxies for members, and we thought at the time, given the fact that the council was new and we were on a fast startup, we were going through all of the projects and kind of making this whole thing up as we went along, as we were trying to develop procedures for the operations of the council, we thought it was critically important that the principals be here for the meetings. And so we didn't want to begin the whole effort of the whole process of allowing designated proxies for the members, the three members of the of the council, three voting members of the council. Now, now that we've gone through a quick startup, we're going to be adopting a strategic plan today. Quite frankly, think it's probably appropriate now to consider it. We, in our conversations, Sam and his staff have suggested that a process where the three voting members can designate a proxy, but they have to. We have to do it. What we're suggesting 10 days ahead, Sam?
Yeah. The policy that you've adopted says that in essence you would do this on the agenda, which has to go out 10 days before the meeting. So,
okay.
For instance, on this agenda, we have an item that says designation of proxies, and the intent is that in the future we'd specifically indicate which council member was designating a proxy and who that was
and who that proxy would be, and it would
right.
be agenda. It would be actually on the agenda.
Right, and for this meeting only.
Okay. So that's kind of the proposal. Comments, Linda? Are you comfortable with that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, okay. I'm very comfortable.
Cindy?
Yeah. We appreciate it. The controller sits on over 50 boards and commissions, and
he can't be at every one.
He considers each one to be of the utmost importance, just like the Ocean Protection Council is. And
okay.
If he's not here, he will send a very qualified representative each
you.
Time.
Okay. Any comments from anybody in the audience? Some of you were involved in those conversations. Any thoughts to the contrary? Oh, Warner. God. Happy to have you here, Warner. That's right. You need to push the button.
You need to push the button at the base of the microphone on the, it's a little, right there.
Warner Chabot with the Ocean Conservancy. I just want to say that I understand the need for the possibility of having to have alternates, but I do want to just stress to the commissioners and make frankly a direct plea both to Linda Adams and to Cindy Ehrenberg that the whole concept of the Ocean Protection Council was to do something very extraordinary in America that I don't think is done in any other state, and that is actually to try to bring the highest level officials from both the legislature and the executive branch together to work cooperatively, hopefully in a politics-free zone, to set a common vision for the oceans. And the clout and the difference between having the actual officials up there, I think, sends a very significant signal as to how important this issue is seen by the administration and the legislature, so that even if you do understand the reality of the size of CalEPA, the number of tasks you have, the 50 commissions that Mr. Wesley has to be on, but I would just plead to you publicly that even if the position is taken to allow alternates to be made, that the public will look at this and would hope that you would make every effort to make sure that the principals are the ones that are, if at all possible, attending this meeting, because I think that will send both a significant signal to the public, the news media, and the agencies that will be charged with carrying out this issue as to how important this is in the public consciousness. Thank you.
Great, Warner. Thanks. Well said. Thank you.
Chairman, members of the Commission, Rudy Murillo. I'm Director of State Government Relations for Scripps Institution of Oceanography. I'd like to I just echo what Warren said. Those are our concerns as well. And I think we need to distinguish between an alternate, which is essentially a proxy of the person, as opposed to a proxy, the Washington, D.C. Fistful of proxies that you use in markup to go through item by item by item, which brings into consideration what Warren said about how the proxy, you know, in a proxy case, basically the information that you receive during the course of discussion has already been decided by that particular vote. So if we could
say that again. Explain that to me again.
Can I give you an example?
Sure. That would maybe be helpful.
When Mr. Van Dierlin had the chair of the communications subcommittee, I was designated to run to Mr. Gore's office to get a fistful of proxies to use in markup, item by item by item.
Right.
The only
thing. You mean from a whole wide variety of members?
Well, as many as we needed to carry the motion.
That's my point. Right. Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought.
And what basically the process was, you'd go in and, you'd, depending on how many items were being considered, say, Mr. Gore, on item number, he'd say, well, and I'd answer in advance, yes, this will not affect rural telephone service in Tennessee. And he would sign the proxy. So we'd have the half dozen. Eight
Got
proxies
it.
For the markup section session. So again, I think Warren reflects the the opinion of a lot of people who are participating in the Ocean Protection Council, which we applaud. But basically, this is an alternate and not a proxy situation.
Good point. Yeah, I hear you. It is an alternate. That's exactly right. It's not our intention to create proxy.
Who would be able to cast a vote depending on...
On behalf of that person, the member who couldn't be there that day.
Yes.
And only for that one meeting.
Using his or her wisdom with the information received during the course of the session.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Mike
Sutton, Vice President of Monterey Bay Aquarium. Welcome to Monterey.
Nice to be here.
You all here. Just a quick suggestion. I tend to agree that the real strength of the council is that it's a cabinet-level body. It's the highest level body in the state, and as Warner pointed out, unique in the country, as far as I know, in terms of the highest level body in any state looking at ocean issues. And so it's important to have cabinet members there or here at the meetings. You might want to consider a rule of procedure that states that only one alternate is permitted per meeting. That way, you'd have a quorum automatically. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
Just a quick note, just correction for the record, that the controller is a, rather than being a cabinet member, the controller is an elected official, a constitutional officer.
Right.
John Fisher, Pacific Grove. A number of months ago, when the Blue Ribbon Committee, chaired by Phil Eisenberg, met, they didn't have a quorum. And they went through a whole long meeting.
So, what's your point here?
The point is, have your members here, please.
Okay.
Because they didn't have a quorum. They lost 6 weeks in their activity to catch up to the next meeting so they could pass things.
Right.
I personally, at the level of importance that this is, I would hope every person named would schedule themselves to be at those meetings and not have to go for proxy voting or somebody an alternate, because this is a very important issue right along with the Blue Ribbon Committee that is now in front of Fish and Game on the whole coast and marine reserves and everything else on ocean policy. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Good comments. We really appreciate the input. I mean, we hear you. It's the last thing we want to do is to create a situation where we don't have the full involvement of cabinet members, constitutional officers, legislative members. But the reality of life today, folks, is that it's going to happen from time to time. As much as we don't want it to happen, our challenge is to try to make it very difficult. And we're gonna suggest that we try this, see how it works. Our commitment, just for the record, obviously hasn't diminished one iota. In fact, it's increased. But the reality of today and our commitments, given the responsibilities we all have, creates these conflicts from time to time, and we're just trying to be realistic about it. But keep our feet to the fire on it, because you're helping, reaffirming the importance of our continued involvement at our level in this activity. I mean, we certainly all agree with you on it. So be sure and keep our feet to the fire on it as we move through this process. And so I'd like to make the motion, Linda, to allow the proxies as we've laid out, proxy determination. Alternate, the designation of an alternate by the members, one of the three voting members, to be done at minimum 10 days prior to the meeting, that it, so it can be noticed in the agenda that goes out, and that alternate will be designated in the minutes, right, Sam? Isn't that the determination? Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chairman, I also appreciate the comments and the importance of this, of the work that we're doing, and I think we've come up with some pretty stringent criteria, and I'd like to second your motion.
All in favor say aye. Aye. Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Appreciate those comments. Next on the agenda is a consideration of the adoption of the April 20th meeting minutes.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
I don't think you guys have voted yet to allow Cindy to...
Do we have to vote on that now?
Yes. Under the procedure that you just adopted, that becomes a separate...
Oh, it does. Right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay.
I so move to allow the controller's representative to vote today.
Thank you. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Linda. I'll second that. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate that. Okay. Consideration and adoption of the April 20th meeting minutes. They're in the packet. Any questions at all, Linda, Cindy, about the minutes of the April 20 meeting?
I'll move approval.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Next on the agenda are the public comment period. Is the public comment period, I should say. We have three individuals who've indicated an interest. I'd like to call on Steve Mathan from AGP Video. He's going to give us Sam indicated, kind of show us where they, some of the new technology involved and that they brought to these meetings. I need to preface this by saying Sam and I were on the Fish and Game Commission when Steve first came to us with the idea of videotaping our meetings, and we looked at him and said, "You want to videotape the commission meetings?" And quite frankly, it was it's turned out to be really a valuable tool for all of us. I mean, again, it's amazing when I'm traveling around California, the number of people who comment on, you know, they've been watching the commission meetings or some of the other meetings, and I mean it's generated a lot of comment. It's been a great public service, Steve. You folks need to really be complimented on the good work and how far you've come in this activity. And so we appreciate you being here today.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, it started out just I was a disgruntled citizen in Morro Bay is where it really started. But,
that's right.
So the city council in Morro Bay is what sent me on this mission. I always felt like it was a mission from God and kind of correlated it with the Blues Brothers.
is there a song that goes with that too?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But I haven't got it together today.
Okay.
It has brought me a long way. One of the things is that we have always, we came into this with no knowledge of video and the recording technologies, but a desire for end products and usable recordings of all types of meetings. To that end, we've schooled ourselves over the last 10 years in all of the newest breaking technologies, going to the NAB in Las Vegas every year and trying to keep up and even get ahead of the curve. One of the things very specific to this particular type of recording is the need to index it, to be able to get to things, probably the most asked question after everybody says, you know, I can't even go to the grocery store anymore and without being accosted because everybody recognizes me, okay, like the Board of Supervisors and things. The next question, though, is how do I get through the not my items and just get to agenda item D1? Well, we've written some software to be able to do that, and more, we started with cable TV and moved to the internet because I frankly, just with the Fish and Game Commission, was producing too much material for the California channel to be able to keep on the air consistently. Also, I realized that was only reaching a certain segment of the population and that a lot more of it was moving to the internet as it continues to. So we're still simulcasting. The County of San Luis Obispo gets the benefit, actually, of getting all of these meetings on their local city channels and the countywide government channel. We have 7 channels down there. My first website was called SlowSpan because that's where we're from. I run everything that we do through SlowSpan. So they're probably the single most informed county in the whole state of California. However, as time went on, and I've been shooting more and more of your meetings, and I'm having trouble with my mouse here. Technology guy having trouble with his own technology. Anyway, I moved on and created a California site specific. This is CalSpan, which is where all of your stuff is specifically. So you can still go in through SlowSpan, take a look at what's going on in the County of San Luis Obispo, but if you don't want to be bored by that, you can come to CalSpan and look at the MLPA meetings, the Fish and Game meetings, a number of other meetings that we're doing now. And I've lost my mouse again. Okay.
It's a mouse disappeared?
There it is. There it is.
Okay. There it is down at the bottom. There you go.
So this is the Resources Agency. What I'd like to show you first is the last meeting that you did was April 20th. Okay. This will open up. And it'll be funny.
Running government to you.
Oh, great.
That's very good.
I'm going to go over to my computer. well, it won't double project in the window. What's going out is this meeting in the little window to the left, and then over in the right-hand side, we've got still problems with the mouse. We've got your agenda. This is a hook. It's a metadata file that's hooked right to your site, and with each item, with each item anyway that's underlined, it goes directly to your staff report. Okay, that'll open up your staff report, and you can an individual can read along the entire staff report that you have before you while they're watching the meeting live. In the case of what I wanted to take you to first was the April 20th meeting, which works fine on the computer, but it's having a hard time coming through the projector. After this meeting, we then take this same file and put little key points for each agenda item. So you can open each agenda item individually right at that point with no hesitation. All of this is being served off of new Windows Media Servers, so there's no buffering, no waiting. It's just like it's on your own computer. It goes right there immediately. That satisfies the need for folks to have all of the written data that's available on any given agenda item, as well as go to, rather than minutes, the actual meeting segment itself of what took place, all of the discussion, the obvious. That's the new program that we've written that we'd like to incorporate into your stuff. I promise the next time before I get here, I'll make sure it's blown through the projector right. Maybe during break, I'll show everybody exactly how it works, because it's really user-friendly, really fast. And once you get the hang of it, it's definitely the way to...
Going to expand it to the commission and other
I've entities? I'm trying, and actually, I don't know. They put out an RFP last August, and we actually were accepted, but they didn't have enough budget. So the legislature has got a budget item in right now that's calling up for a little more money than what they've got. They fell back on and just went with their audio contract from before. It was a matter of, I actually did get accepted, but they didn't have the funding to do it. So that's an issue that's trying to get worked out right now. Number of agencies, actually air pollution quality. I've got a number in the hopper that are trying to maneuver this into position. It's definitely electronic medium recording is the wave of the future. Like Sam said, Fish and Game, oddly enough, went in the oldest commission in the state, has taken the bull by the horns, and is all of 2005, the official record in the official records of vault is a set of DVDs that we produced.
Interesting.
So,
sign of the times, isn't it?
Sign of the times.
It really is. Steve, you're welcome. Good work, and we appreciate you. Your willingness to do this. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Chris Wills, followed by Mark Shargle. I don't know if I pronounced that correct. Chris?
Thank you, Secretary Crispin, Secretary Adams, Ms. Aronson. I had some fairly general comments that could have fit under a couple of your agenda items, and I put them under the general public comments because they do kind of provide a background for many different things you're discussing today in mapping. At the Ocean Protection Council, you have to deal with questions of resources, sand resources onshore and offshore, geologic hazards onshore and offshore, where the faults are, where the sand is moving as it comes down the rivers into the ocean, onto the beaches, into the harbors, where the various organisms are, whether the organisms that require a hard substrate can find that habitat and anchor to it, whether the organisms that need a soft ground, muddy surface to burrow into, where that habitat is, all the different erosion hazards along the coast, the various infrastructure we have along the coast all depend on the materials underlying the nearshore and offshore. And I just want to point out, and it's in your strategic plan, I just wanted to underline that the geologic maps showing the physical properties of those materials are the foundation for much of your decision making. We are here in Monterey, and I wanted to point out that the Monterey 100,000 scale quadrangle is the one place where the State Geological Survey, I represent as the chief of the geologic mapping program, has put together the regional geologic map, including all of the detailed geologic maps onshore, so showing the where the sand is coming from, how it's getting to the shoreline, and all the geologic materials in the offshore, and how the sand is distributed across the coast and through the bay and down the canyon and into the deep ocean. All those materials are shown on our geologic map of the Monterey 30 by 60 degree quadrangle. That's published in 2002, available to the public through our sales offices in Menlo Park in Sacramento for a nominal fee. We have to charge for the printing costs, unfortunately. It's also available as a CD with all the GIS and PDF files. We're moving ahead with geologic mapping of the onshore and offshore. In Southern California, the San Diego, Oceanside, and Long Beach sheets are nearly done, available on our website as preliminary geologic maps. We're working with USGS in the Huntington Beach and Long Beach Harbor areas to do a more detailed onshore-offshore maps. We're working with Moss Landing Marine Labs to do a detailed onshore-offshore geologic maps of the Big Sur Coast. Both of those should be done sometime in the next year or so. I think these will help you in your decision-making, and I'm looking forward to working with you and the other agencies represented here to provide some of these foundation geologic materials maps that you'll be using. I have copies of the Monterey map for the commission members if you're interested and like to go through those.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Can I ask a question?
Appreciate it, Chris. Sure.
Are you familiar with the Coastal Sediment Management work group? With Cliff Davenport and everybody?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm just hoping. I mean, this is really important stuff, and we are trying to look at the whole California coast in terms of the littoral cells and where all these sediments are going and how that's going to affect a lot of processes. So this information, I gather, is being integrated with...
Oh, sure. And just in the hierarchy thing, as you know, Cliff is the... what is your official position of the Coastal Sediment Management? He's the mover and shaker for geologic stuff and GIS at the Coastal Sediment Management work group. He's a CGS employee. He is part of the geologic mapping group on our org chart, although he's in several other people's org charts in different places, I think. And we do very closely coordinate both the mapping and the GIS work and try to keep everybody on the same page there.
Thank you very much.
Chris, thanks. Appreciate you being here. And we'd love to see that. Thank you. Mark, followed by Richard Sadowski. Mark?
Morning. I'm Mark Shargel. I live up at the north end of Monterey Bay. I come down here and dive a lot. And I want to welcome and thank you for making the trip down here to the Monterey Bay region, which has been my home for over two decades. We run a terrific sector of our economy in the Monterey Bay region on healthy, vibrant marine life, from the beachgoers and the kayakers up at Santa Cruz off of the wharf to the divers who swim in at the breakwater here in Monterey, almost within sight of this room, to the surfers at Lover's Point, to the fleet of dive boats that sets Carmel Bay as their destination. For our appreciation of the resources that we entrust you to protect and appreciate your work on, marine protected areas are very important. I run an underwater photography business, and forgive me, I'm going to have to get back to work later today, so I may digress into an agenda item you'll be taking up in a moment later this afternoon. I also served on the regional stakeholder group that assembled the packages for the Marine Life Protection Act. At this point, we've got recommendations from the Blue Ribbon Task Force. I've spoken in detail with representatives of the Department of Fish and Game, who are now drawing up their recommendation that I'm concerned may risk undersizing and underprotecting marine protected areas, and most of all, underprotecting the areas that are so greatly appreciated for recreation, so that vibrant marine life that drives the tourist economy in this sector may not have the opportunity to thrive and recover that we count on MLPA to give it. If that happens, it will be a tragic fumbling of an opportunity to do some really proactive, far-reaching conservation work. I want you to think about, please, when you consider your adaptive management, the notion that these protected areas, because of the slow growth of the species there, may take time scale of decades to truly measure their effectiveness. When you consider adaptive management, think about a plan that could answer a few critical questions. If the areas that don't are not performing the way we hope they will, is it because they're too small? Is it because they are underprotected? And most of all, and hardest of all to answer, do they fail to capitalize an opportunity to drive even greater economic gains in tourism and recreation because they fail to protect the areas that are most appreciated by those economic sectors? I want to thank you for your work here. Appreciate the time that you've spent listening to me.
You're hopefully stay involved in this the process, right?
I stood up at a microphone for the first time to talk about marine protected areas in 1997.
Good.
I can't seem to stop doing it.
And, don't now.
And I'm not about to now.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Mr. Crispin.
Thanks, Mark.
And I also want to mention that I'm glad to see that my work has gotten onto Steve Matthews' computer. That nice jellyfish picture that was on his desktop was one of mine. Maybe he'll favor us with a little slideshow on your lunch break or something.
There you go.
Hey. I donated a bunch of my
there
work.
There it is. That's right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Richard, followed by Marla Jo Bruton. Richard?
Morning. My name is Richard Sadowski. I'm representing the Central Coast Ocean Outfall Group, or known as the Cougars. I live in North Morro Bay. I have about 25 years of field engineering experience. I worked from Point Agüello in Vandenberg Air Force Base all the way up to the Morro Bay or the San Luis Obispo County, Monterey County line, and had the pleasure of working up and down the coast. I'm also a grade 4 collection systems operator certificate holder from the California Water Environment Association. I'm here to speak on some of the problems here that we have in San Luis Obispo County. I have personally videotaped a lot of the sewer collections, miles of sewer collections lines in the Morro Bay area. And what we have here is a infrastructure that's been overly burdened and is basically there's an INI problem, which is an infiltration problem that we have. We also have in the Morro Bay treatment plant, we have a 301H waiver that we've been operating under. I would like to ask this council to look into this matter. What we have in San Luis Obispo is a systemic problem with selective enforcement. And part of the problem there is that we have a capacity issue with the plant. And I've proven that with the sewer flow study that I accomplished for Cayuca Sanitary District, which is a special district that pumps raw sewage to the Morro Bay treatment plant. And while finding all this information out, the other problem that we have there is we need some support from a council like yours with the NPDES permitting process and EPA to get involved, because the district attorney of the county of San Luis, his name is Gerald T. Shea, and some of the other developers that are involved in illegal development and affordable housing scam that's going on over there are endangering people with existing homes by ignoring the drainage issues. And I think that if we can have this council maybe get together with the NPDES, EPA, we can address this systemic problem that we're having in San Luis Obispo County.
Is a systemic problem the fact that there's not enough sewer capacity?
That's part of it.
Sewer treatment capacity?
Yeah, part of the
problem. Is that what you're getting at here?
Yeah, that part of the problem is this, is that we have developers that are sitting on boards and staff members that are conspiring to making undevelopable lots developable by extending sewer lines without going through the proper protocol. Okay? And this is where we need to get outside and of that little systemic problem and get outside and address this issue.
Have you taken your issues before the Regional Water Quality Control Board?
Oh, yeah. The Regional Water Quality Board, are you familiar with, if you're familiar with the Los Osos issue there, which is part of that, it's right. All part of that. I was involved with Los Osos as well.
So that's all a part of that whole conversation surrounding Los Osos and the sewer treatment facilities there too?
Well, see, the Los Osos issue is basically Los Osos, Morro Bay, all share that same bite, that Estero bite.
Okay.
And the reason why, one of the main reasons why I'm concerned about this is I grew up in L.A., and I grew up during the time before the California Water Clean Water Act, and I used to swim in Venice Beach, and it used to be known where the debris meets the sea and stuff, and these were issues that Santa Monica had to address. Mm-hmm. And what I see now is a problem with Estero Bay is being basically under assault by illegal development, and I would love to have this council get involved.
We'll take it under advisement. Again, Secretary Adams and Kelly PA, I mean, they have the state and regional boards under them. NPDES permits or a federal permit for US EPA, and
right.
So we'll be working with them. So we'll take it under advisement. See what we can find out about it.
Yeah, okay? That'd be great. Right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, Marla.
Good morning. My name is Marla Jo Bruton. I'm from North Morro Bay as well. So we have three Morro Bay people here today. This is my first time to address or even attend one of your council meetings. I, too, am just some basic things. As far as the Clean Beaches Program, it's with the EPA, it's a voluntary program. And if you look at their site for Morro Bay, there's no one reporting there as far as the beach waters. And they show absolutely no beach closures for forever. So just because we're not testing the waters doesn't mean that we don't have a huge problem there. We have the once through cooling Duke plant. Right next to that is a wastewater treatment plant that's been working on a 301H waiver for 30 years. And as far as the NPDES permitting, the contact person that's shown for Morro Bay is Craig Cummings, and he hasn't worked for Morro Bay for over a year. So at one of the council meetings, one of the staff workers had was giving a little input on the NPDES and said that they didn't think that that they would be watching us too much, so they're not really interested in stepping up to the plate, and we have a huge amount of problem there. People are getting burns in the water.
Have you visited with your local state legislators about this?
Yes.
Okay. And they're aware of your concerns and issues?
Yeah, and the governor and everybody.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it. Any other speaker cards? Nothing? All right, thank you. Thank you all for participating. We appreciate it. Next on the agenda is a consideration of a possible adoption of the Ocean Protection Council 5-year strategic plan. I'm going to turn over to Brian and Drew.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today is a really important day for the Ocean Protection Council, because we're considering a new comprehensive strategic plan to guide our activities into the future. This council has made tremendous progress in a very, very short period of time. And I can tell you, I hear that from people all over California, but when the Secretary and I go back to Washington, D.C., that's all we hear. People want to know what's going on in California and what this council is up to. Just some observations, some achievements to date in a very short period of time. We've put $16 million into a variety of projects, ranging from ecosystem management initiatives, one particular one is in Morro Bay, for example, fisheries management, watershed management, control of invasive species, eradication of derelict fishing gear, offshore sea bottom mapping, water quality control projects, and many, many others. We are really moving fast. And today the council is considering another $1.1 million to move towards these goals. We've adopted an information research and outreach strategy for this state. That went back to Washington, D.C., and the leaders of the U.S. and the Pew Oceans Commission have called this document a national model. They've said to the federal government, why aren't you doing this? I think that's a pretty major achievement for this organization. Working with the California Biodiversity Council, we've had a California Ocean Economic Summit. We've put forth an economic assessment which showed in the year studied, $43 billion, that's billion dollars, was pumped into our economy from ocean-dependent industry in this state. So what this council is doing is not only important for the environment, but it's critical for the economic engine of California and critical for the economic engine of this nation, because all of these economic activities are linked to goods and services that are moving throughout the nation. So this is not a California thing. This is a national thing. This council has taken important policy positions which are being listened to in Washington, D.C. with regard to opposition of new oil and gas leasing off this coast. We're not getting as much of a reaction on the next one, but supporting the Coastal Zone Management Act and looking at reauthorization of the Coastal Zone Management Act. We need to get that message through to Washington, D.C. And we're looking at addressing the impacts of once-through cooling from power plants. This is a pretty revolutionary thing. This is a pretty major thing. These are facilities all up and down the California coast, and the position that's being taken by this council is resonating throughout the state. And the council has supported key elements of the governor's Ocean Action Plan. As you may recall, the governor was one of the first governors, if not the first governor in the United States, to come out with a comprehensive plan in 90 days. This plan was developed. It dealt with governance and economics and research and education and technology development and resource stewardship. And I'm firmly of the belief that that has helped force these issues at the national level. And then, as you know, the council has determined it's time now to develop a strategic plan. We got out fast with this organization, but now we need to look strategically at how we're going to take those critical steps into the future. Looking at the plan development, if you look over at these staff members, you're going to not hopefully, but more than likely see some weary people, because this document has had input from stakeholders, all levels of state government, the NGO community, private funders, and the public. And this outreach has, in my view, been not only comprehensive but exhaustive. And if you look at the appendices of this document and look at all the meetings that have been held up and down the coast, I think you get an idea that this was not an exercise that was predetermined. This is an exercise that really, really brought the public in and really had some impact. And looking at the continuum, the evolution of this policy, the mission of this strategic plan was taken pretty substantially from the 1997 Wilson administration document, California's Ocean Resources and Agenda for the Future. But again, staff listened to what people were saying and some modifications were made to that. We learn. We improve, hopefully, as we move forward. So the plan before you today describes how the council is going to improve ocean and coastal management in California through enhancement of coordination at all levels of government, research institutions, and non-governmental organizations. And I don't think we'll ever get it exactly right, but I think the idea is let's do our best to really start making things as efficient and as effective as possible for protecting our ocean and coastal resources here in California. So now I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Bowen, who's going to provide you with an overview of the plan, about the mission, the objectives and actions, and probably most importantly, the tools necessary to implement these. Mr. Bowen.
Thank you, Brian. Okay. Thank you, Brian, Secretary Chairman, members, and the public. Secretary Chrisman and Brian and I talked beforehand, and I said in the interest of time I'd keep things brief. I promise under 2 hours, and I'll stick to that. Now, I just have some – Brian's really laid out the specifics and what we're planning to do over the next 5 years. I really wanted to just kind of talk a bit about priorities and how we've structured the plan and kind of not walk through it section by section, but just sort of give an overview of how we assembled it. First, though, I just want to say it's an honor to be here, and I thank you, Chair Crisman, for your earlier introduction. This is very exciting to see the level of public involvement that we have here. I know there are people watching on the web, and so it's an exciting time to have moved in. As Brian points out, it's also been exhausting. My year at the governor's office immediately prior to this has been good training for being thrown into helping pull together in the last couple of weeks this strategic plan that I'm very pleased with. The OPC was created based on this overwhelming public support for ocean protection. It's tough when we see with recent elections in particular to get Californians in the numbers like 80% and 90% to agree on just about anything, and yet those are the kind of support figures we're seeing in polls consistently when folks in the state are asked, do you support coastal protection? Are you willing to spend money to make sure that it's done properly? And we see those kinds of numbers. So it's nice to take this job with that level of support, and it's also nice to take a job where we've had a staff in place. Mike, you've been a leader on this since the start, and it's nice to be able to walk into a train that's moving and knocking off accomplishments at a nice clip. Of course, Brian leads the team, but I just want to say Leah and Alice and John and Melissa and Penny and others are also form the nucleus of the resources team. And then at the Conservancy, Sam and Neil run the show, but we've got an OPC staff, many of whom you'll be hearing from today, and they've done a lot of great work on some of the specifics. Brian talked about the plan and some of the details, and I'm not going to elaborate on that so much, other than to say, process-wise, I thought the stakeholder input was amazing. This morning, my BlackBerry has continued to buzz with comments that are coming in. Someone handed me an envelope with comments on it. So the public is paying attention, listening, deeply involved, and showing that they care about this issue. So that's exciting. And it's been broad-based. We've had folks from the fishing community. We've had government agencies. We've had environmental community members. We've had business interests, all commenting on our work. So I think we're the challenge is to keep that public interest and public involvement, and having you show up, as we discussed earlier, I think is a key piece of that. Our primary challenge was to take all these great ideas that we got from all these different stakeholders and try to accommodate as many of them as possible, and at the same time really set some priorities. So what I want to focus on is our priorities, which appear in Section 2 of the plan. Again, I'm not going to step through it, but I'll just talk about it generally. Section 1 is really the story. I think it tells a good story. It's a compelling story. It talks about why OPC was created and what our challenges are broadly moving forward. But Section 2 is what I want to focus on this morning, and that is our priorities and the objectives and action steps we plan to take to complete those priorities. In selecting the priorities, we looked to our governing document, the California Ocean Protection Plan, or Protection Act, and staff and the public we interacted with went back and forth, and we talked about different ways to organize it and what was really the top priority, and we kept going back to the Ocean Protection Act for our guidance, and I'm just going to read the very first priority that it states in summary, and that tracks with what our first priority is. On pages 7 to 9, we get into this in the plan. And it states, the council shall, quote, coordinate activities of state agencies to improve the effectiveness of state efforts to protect ocean resources. Doesn't sound like much, just a sentence, but this is a very tall order. We're being asked to review the activities of the agencies that you, Secretary Crisman, and you, Secretary Adams, manage, to look at the controllers, the State Lands Commission, perhaps the largest landlord of public resources in the state, and look to see over the years, as mandates have been handed down on your divisions within your agencies over the last 20 or 30 years, review those and see where there's overlap, see where there's sometimes inconsistent functions, see where things have been accomplished and there's a mandate that still exists that doesn't need to be there. We broke this broad directive from the Ocean Protection Act into a number of sub-components so we can actually take it apart and work on it. And I'm not going to go through all of them, but I did want to hit on the first two. The first one is operational funding. And our task here is to look at all the money that is spent in the state of California, all the public money that's spent on ocean protection activities for the operations of government agencies. It's not been done before, to my knowledge, so our task is a new one and an interesting one. And what we're going to try to do is look, again, where there might be overlapping functions, where we can most efficiently spend that money, and find out where there's gaps. We have heard already from a number of the folks that you are essentially the bosses of within your agencies, and they've told us we have so many mandates that we've collected over the years, and we're struggling to do our best to fulfill those. So again, as we look through these, we hope to identify where there are places where things can be done more efficiently, but also where there may be gaps and we need simply more funding to fulfill those mandates. Second issue under this broad topic of governance that the COPPA directs us to really focus on is the laws and regulations that the entities that are discharging these functions operate under. Very related to funding, and these are going to work in a parallel track, but while we're looking at the funding and how many PYs are doing various activities, we're also going to look at what the mandates are and over the years, again, as I said earlier, what's working, what's not, and what we can do to streamline things. We're fortunate to have two legislative members on the council as well, and they not only provide guidance, but they also will help us to the extent we need to amend legislation, be our advocates and allies in that process. What you see before you has very ambitious timelines in it. Part of what we're doing in this governance section is holding agencies accountable for their ocean protection mandate. And if we're going to hold other divisions of state government accountable, we ought to hold ourselves accountable as well. And so you'll see in there we have action items that have specific due dates in them, and we expect the folks in this room and others to hold our feet to the fire and make sure that we actually accomplish those things. The second main directive in the Ocean Protection Act, and it's the last one I'm going to just read briefly from, is to, quote, coordinate the collection and sharing of scientific data related to coast and ocean resources. Again, this sounds simple, but is also a tall order. California has some of the top researchers in this area in the world. And what we haven't done to date and what the legislature is directing us to do is to find a way to compile those in a meaningful format and then communicate them appropriately to decision makers so that as decisions are made, whether it's the Fish and Game Commission or the State Water Board or whatever state agency, they have before them the best science. And it's happening today without our help, but our charge is to make sure we're up to date and we're collecting the best information out there and getting it in front of folks. That's it as far as what I wanted to cover on governance, and I'm not going to go through all of the other five main topics that we cover in the strategic plan as our priorities. However, I did want to say that as you go through those, they aren't prioritized. We've got water quality and habitats and education and outreach, and we put those not in any particular order. They're all very important. What we did try to do, though, is call out those activities where this body is really in a position to move something forward. And Brian mentioned in his remarks once through cooling, and Christine Blackburn from our staff is going to talk later in the program about that issue in some detail. But that's a perfect example where we've got a number of agencies with responsibilities for this. We've got the CEC, the PUC, State Water Board, State Lands Commission, and others whose responsibility it is at some level to deal with the effects of once through cooling. And so having this forum to bring together a proposal or a framework by which they may make their decisions, I think is critical. And that's what this study you'll hear about this afternoon is all about. Finally, in the base part of the document is Section 3, and that's tools. And chief among the tools that we will use to do this work I've been talking about is funding. I talked earlier about operational funding and how we're planning to approach that. But the legislature is also endowing us with funds to spend on projects. And we've got a methodology in place at OPC to make sure that we spend those funds as strategically and sensibly as possible. We will also be reviewing those, and like this whole document, making changes as needed. But I think we've got a good tool and good set of tools in place to make sure we spend that money well. And finally, there are some appendices in the document. I won't go through them, but we'll direct your attention to the main one, which is Appendix A. And what Appendix A does is provide a comprehensive list of, I've been talking in general terms, this gets very specific, and talks about the types of specific projects we'll engage in over the next couple of years. It's both broader than what we're likely to get to in the next 5 years, and it's also narrower. It isn't meant to be an exhaustive list of every single project we might engage in, and part of the benefit of this group is we're nimble, and as things come up, we can address them. So don't think of that as an exhaustive list, but certainly a comprehensive one. And it's largely a funding exercise, that not exclusively, but that directs readers to the types of things that we'll be providing our support in the form of funding. So in closing, I'd say we have big plans, big goals. We try to break things down into bite-sized chunks that this body can actually focus on and accomplish. But again, I want to say that before you hear from public speakers that we do acknowledge that it's a living document. It will change over time. Nothing's set in stone. But I think it's a terrific effort of the staff and taking public input. And I thank you.
Great, Drew. Thanks. Well done. Nice having you on board. Appreciate it. My compliments to everybody in this effort. I mean, you've heard a lot about it. It's, again, I think the previous speakers indicated the depth and breadth of the commitment, the depth and breadth of the involvement, not only staff involvement, but most of you in this room through this process, and we really do appreciate it. What I'd like to do now is open it up for public discussion. We've got a number of folks who have indicated an interest in speaking. I'd like to first call up Paul Michel from U.S. EPA Region 9, followed by Krista Kamer. Paul?
Good morning, Secretary Chrisman and council members. Happy Ocean Day.
Yeah, thank you.
Just to prove how serious I take Oceans Week, I took the day off work yesterday, pulled my kids out of school, and went to Stinson Beach. So
there you go. Attaboy. Good. You got your priorities straight.
I got my priorities straight.
That's right.
Yeah, Paul Michel, EPA. Just on behalf of the Southwest Regional Team of Coastal America, the partnership of 13 federal agencies and departments, just want to offer our support for the strategic plan, as well as offer to provide for a federal work group to assist with implementation of the plan and coordinate on joint objectives and actions. As you may know, I've been working with council staff on a partnership proposal to establish a federal-state partnership for California. I would like to suggest that the upcoming California the World Ocean Symposium would be a great opportunity to announce the partnership and bring together the state and federal principals to kick things off. The Coastal America Connection is just one way for the council to engage the federal resource and regulatory agencies on all six of the strategic plan themes. The idea here is not to duplicate or overlap with other existing joint efforts, but to seize upon those actions that need new initiative or augmented effort. Coastal America's main three tools, the corporate partnership, bringing private sector dollars to restoration projects, the learning centers, Monterey Bay Aquarium and Long Beach Aquarium for education and outreach, and our Department of Defense Innovative Readiness Training Program, which allows reserve military units to on training exercises to help out with restoration projects. These are just some of the tools Coastal America brings, as well as our emphasis on habitat restoration. These are all available to California. The U.S. Ocean Action Plan called for the establishment of regional governance structures, and they called out for two to take action on immediately. That was the Great Lakes Initiative and the Gulf of Mexico Alliance. And just this spring, the Gulf of Mexico Alliance issued their plan. Now, this is a five-state-led effort with federal work group to address the issues of the Gulf of Mexico. I think it's a great model. I think the same could be done here in California. We don't need direction from Washington to do this. I think it just makes good sense to do it. Already, the Coastal America Regional Team has assisted with input to the strategic plan. We've coordinated on a number of projects, Oyster Reef Project, namely in San Francisco Bay, and we've coordinated with the State Water Resources Board on some water quality issues along the coast already. So much more can be done. I'm pleased to offer the support of the Southwest Regional Team of Coastal America with active participation from DOD and Army Corps of Engineers, NOAA, Department of Interior, and EPA. Now, Coastal America sometimes gets a bad rap because it's a largely volunteer effort, not a federally funded program with deep pockets. However, whatever you want to call it, you're coordinating with the activities of the Ocean Protection Council with the relevant federal agencies is a good idea. What the Southwest team of Coastal America offers is that intersection place on many issues. I would like to offer to continue to work with your staff on what will work and be value added for California. Whether, you know, whatever federal initiative or ocean governance thing is the mechanism, you'll be most likely dealing with the same folks here in California at the regional level. So whether it's Coastal America, CMOR, or any of the other U.S. Ocean Plan entities, the Southwest team of Coastal America is the only one that is currently functioning here in California. So with that, I'd just like to thank you and offer again the support on the strategic plan. I think it was a great document and look forward to working with you on its implementation.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Krista Kammer, followed by Santi Roberts.
Hi.
Hi.
Sorry, I meant to write down number 7, so I'll be back.
You what?
I'll be back. I meant to speak on number 7.
Oh.
I put down the wrong number, so I'll be
you
back.
You put down the wrong number. Okay,
yes,
you're
sorry.
Number 7 then.
No,
that's okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, Krista. Santi Roberts, then, followed by Amy David.
Hi, Santi Roberts with Oceana. I did put down number 6. I'm with Oceana. We're an international nonprofit organization focusing on marine conservation. We're headquartered in D.C., but we have several offices on the West Coast, including most recently in Monterey. We've been working on issues of importance to Californians and the OPC for some years now. For the last 4 years, we've been working on essential fish habitat issues in both the Pacific and North Pacific. And as part of that process, we've identified important ecological areas in federal waters and more recently in state waters as part of the MLPA. This work has all been within the context of moving management in the direction of scientifically driven ecosystem-based management. In light of this background, I'd like to provide just quick comments on 4 points. But first, thank you. It's obviously an incredibly complicated task that you're all involved in and have signed up for, and you know, we certainly as an organisation really do appreciate it and appreciate all the hard work that's gone in both on the from the council members themselves and the staff. So thank you. Our first point is on ecosystem-based management. We support and applaud the fact that ecosystem-based management has been made a focus in the latest draft of the document and believe this is a significant improvement from the previous draft. In the very positive vision statement to express intent that, quote, management boundaries correspond with ecosystem regions. While pilot projects like the Morro Bay project are great and worthwhile, we'd encourage the OPC to take ecosystem regions as meaning considerably larger scale in more open waters, just for future work. Second is on the role of science in the process. We're concerned that language allowing the science team to provide recommendations has been removed from the latest draft. In order to ensure management is fully science-driven, the role of science needs to be strengthened rather than weakened. The role of science should be to provide the foundation from which the stakeholder process can proceed in an informed manner, rather than simply an advisory capacity once many of the decisions have already been made. Our third point is on habitat damage mitigation. In the physical processes and habitat structure theme, the report mentions that, again, quotes, certain types of fishing gear are a factor damaging coastal and oceanic habitat, but the document fails to provide any objectives to mitigate this problem. It's widely accepted that the gears most damaging to habitat are mobile-tending bottomed gears, such as bottom trawls. For this reason, the California legislature passed SB 1459 in 2004 to prohibit most bottom trawling in state waters. Mm-hmm. Yet several areas remain open. In particular, bottom trawling continues today in Monterey Bay. That industry is worth about $200,000. According to the Department of Fish and Game. In comparison, the revenue generated by tourism in the Monterey area is upward of $500 million. We feel that's a pretty good reason to try and ensure ecosystem health. So we urge the OPC to include an objective in this theme expressing the intent that the effects of bottom trawling be mitigated in all waters under which it has jurisdiction. Our fourth and final point is on research and monitoring. Again, we commend the Council on the new ecosystem-based management-based performance measure. As I mentioned earlier, we've spent some time working on better understanding the importance of areas all along the Central California coast as part of the MLPA process, which I have to say again was extraordinary. Through analysis of biogeographical, bathymetric, and substrate mapping data, we identified 51 ecologically important areas. We've actually just put together a brochure as well, which is over here, and fairly nice. Despite the quality of the MLPA process itself, many of these remain unprotected in all packages currently under consideration by the department. We encourage the OPC to acknowledge the importance of these areas and others identified as the MLPA process moves north and south and through other processes, and to help implement a comprehensive monitoring system for these unprotected, ecologically important areas. Again, thank you.
Good. Thank you very much. Amy David.
Good morning. My name is Amy David, and I am a policy analyst at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Along with Mike Sutton, I would like to welcome you to Monterey on behalf of the aquarium and voice our support for your work to protect California's oceans and coasts. We applaud you for the work that you have already completed, and we look forward to working with you as you continue your mission. I want to comment today on your five-year strategic plan. The latest draft captures many of the comments and feedback that you've received over the past several months from many parties, including the aquarium. It offers a clear and meaningful vision statement, quantifiable performance measures, and it is focused on achieving outcomes, including the very important goal of moving toward an ecosystem-based approach to ocean and coastal management. I'd also like to comment today on the importance of ocean science, research, and monitoring, and the need to communicate relevant information to managers and other decision makers. At the recent meeting of the Marine Life Protection Act's Blue Ribbon Task Force, task force members noted the lack of a mechanism to assess and coordinate existing research and monitoring efforts and to respond to important questions posed by resource managers and other decision makers. This idea is captured in the appendix of your plan as a data synthesis mechanism, with the goal of assembling scientific results from state and national efforts and producing products for diverse scientific, public, and policy audiences. This kind of mechanism would be worthwhile for several purposes throughout the state, including the implementation of the Marine Life Protection Act. As the coordinating body for ocean issues in California, I encourage you to make the development of this kind of mechanism a priority. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Amy. Linda Sheehan, followed by Rudy Murillo, it looks like. Linda?
Thank you. Good morning. Linda Sheehan, Executive Director for California Coastkeeper Alliance. I'd like to take the opportunity to echo your welcome to Ms. Adams. Congratulations. And also to commend staff for their excellent work in making many significant improvements to the strategic plan. It's very exciting to look at it. A couple of key improvements that I'd like to highlight was one in particular that Drew mentioned with regard to funding. The types of examination and coordination of funding opportunities is critical, and I think that's extremely important. Also, the increased focus on monitoring and, of course, the focus on once through cooling. I can't mention enough. Thank you for that. I just got back very late last night from a trip to D.C. Lobbying on Magnuson-Stevens Fisheries Management Act, and if the two bills that I'm looking at right now are any indication of where the country's heading on fisheries management, you are the first and last line of defense for California's ocean life. What you're doing is so extremely important. The folks who I was with, the Marine Fish Conservation Networks, over 150 commercial, recreational, fishing groups, and conservation groups. And one of the other things we talked about was a new initiative that they really want to undertake, which is integrated ecosystem-based management. They recognize that that has to be the next wave of the future. And that is the key comment that I had on the strategic plan that I think could benefit from additional focus. Page 9 of the strategic plan does appropriately mention integrated ecosystem management planning across agencies as a key action item, and that's critical, and I thank you for that. But this is an extremely difficult task for agencies. And the appendix, and also on page 19, the steering committee that's referenced as tools to implement many of the action items, don't address ecosystem management and leave integrated management within agencies to later undefined committees. So it's not quite clear how that process will happen. And it's so important, as was echoed in the last couple of days in D.C. by groups all around the country, that I think it's extremely important for this council to recognize that there needs to be a real clear process for doing that. One other point that I did want to raise with respect to the strategic plan, and particularly with Ms. Adams here, is enforcement. And I think that enforcement, the action item on page 8, is an excellent action item. I think it could be even stronger with two changes. One is a focus on integration across agencies, which is something that our organization has commented on before. But also getting this data simply on the web and effectively deputizing the public as stewards by showing them what's going on. And Cal EPA has a prototype intranet database. The acronym is EDET. I have not been privy to what it means yet, but I'm guessing that environment enforcement and database show up. It's in there somewhere. I haven't actually seen it, but I've heard tell about it, and it sounds very exciting. Facilities having, by facility, all of the enforcement actions across agencies, air, water, et cetera. Extremely exciting, and exactly the kind of thing that the Ocean Council should be looking at for ocean issues. In addition, you've heard today, and probably will hear some other particular specific deliverables that would benefit the action items in the plan. So with respect to these comments, there are a couple of ways of possibly addressing them, if that was your pleasure. One would be to take them under advisement and have a special meeting in a few weeks and address very specific amendments to the plan. Another, and the alternative, is to adopt the plan today and direct staff to address these issues, which the plan certainly does not disallow, as they're developing work plans with the specific agencies to implement the plan over the next several years. But I do think that the integrated ecosystem management piece needs a developed process in order to go forward in the excellent and expeditious timeframes that you've laid out. So again, thank you very much to you and your staff for such a good job on the strategic plan, and I look forward to working with you to implement it.
Thanks,
thank
Linda. Thanks for your help on this. Appreciate it. Rudy Murillo, followed by Jim Curlin. Rudy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rudy Murillo, Director of State Government Relations, Scripps Institution of Oceanography. Keep it simple. Well, first of all, we, on behalf of the administration scientists at Scripps, we'd like to salute Secretary Adams, the newest member of the council. We're delighted that the announcement was made while you were at Scripps.
Nice to see you, Rudy. Thank you.
Short and sweet, Scripps Institution of Oceanography endorses and applauds the five-year plan. We recognize there are mid-course corrections that will have to be made as a living document, and we're confident it will move forward in the with the same success that it has to date. I had to cross out 8, put down 6, item 8, item 6. We received a host of comments on marine protected areas, item 8 today, all positive. We're trying to build upon this 80% approval that Drew mentioned. It's a tough baseline, but if, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to put these together and forward them to Drew in the next next 10 days or so to save time now and during the consideration of the action. And I promise to call out any negative ones. I didn't see any, but it'll take a while. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Finally, a second endorsement, and I just have to summarize this. This arrived by fax at my hotel. It's a letter from Elizabeth Venrick, who's the director of Cal Coffee. Two pertinent sentences in it. Cal Coffee is the oldest ecosystem monitoring program in the United States. Partnership among California Department of Fish and Game, National Marine Fisheries Service, University of California at Scripps. She, on behalf of Cal Coffee, Elizabeth hopes that we will engage in the marine protected area monitoring and we look forward to working with you and staff on this subject area. Toward the end of the letter, just to summarize, Cal Coffee shares with the OPC the goal of development and support of sound ecosystem management practices. I don't want to be redundant. Other speakers have touched upon this. I believe as the OPC strategic plan is implemented, you will find that Cal Coffee provides the broad ocean climate that is necessary for interpretation of more local programs and a broad framework for the integration and coordination of individual programs. So two endorsements. Scripps Institution of Oceanography, and as I read Elizabeth's letter, also Cal Coffee. Thank you so much for your for being here today.
Rudy, thanks. Thanks for your help on this. Appreciate it. Jim Kerlin, followed by Rod Fujita. Jim?
Good morning, Secretary Crisman, council members and staff, Coastal Conservancy staff. My name is Jim Kerlin, and I'm the Marine Program Associate for Defenders of Wildlife. Defenders is a leading nonprofit conservation organization representing over 490,000 members nationwide, and nearly one quarter of that, or 123,000, here in California. Defenders greatly appreciates the various avenues we've had to provide feedback on the draft five-year strategic plan, and echo what Brian said earlier, that there's just been a lot of opportunities. The California Coastal Conservancy, Resources Agency staff, and others have put a great deal of work into the plan and have worked hard to solicit feedback from a variety of stakeholders, and that should be applauded. This version of the plan is greatly improved. As recently as about a month ago, Defenders provided further comments on the plan's, in our mind, failure to adequately address the issues of the sea otter, land, sea, health-related issues, and how that relates to the more broad-based goal of improving upon water quality monitoring programs such as the Swamp Program and Mussel Watch and others, and to create a new program that would monitor for pathogen pollution. And as you are aware, and I'm sure the Resources Agency staff and Coastal Conservancy staff are glad to get me out of their hair, but we've been persistent in trying to get Dr. Dave Jessup to speak before the council, and we're grateful that you've invited him to speak today, and he'll be talking to you later and talking to you about the sea otter and the land-sea connection. We would suggest that you might hold off adopting the iteration of the plan until you hear from Dr. Jessup. We still feel this latest version of the plan has failed to adequately address the aforementioned issues of boosting funding for existing water quality monitoring programs and using the health concerns of one of the state's high-profile marine mammals to guide the ocean and coastal water quality portions of this plan. In recognition that you have a full agenda today, I will not reiterate our previous concerns about the plan, which mostly pertain to the plan section on the ocean and coastal water quality in this current version. Instead, I'll refer you to our May 4th comments and urge the council to, if adopting this current version today, allow for this to be an ever-changing document, which it seems like Mr. Bohan had mentioned earlier, it's a living document that would allow for the opportunity to include further input and incorporation of tangible benchmarks. But that said, our recommendation would be to possibly hold off adoption of this current version and allow for more thorough review from the new executive policy officer, Mr. Bohan, and incorporate additional public comments on this draft. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments.
Thank you, Jim. Rod Fujita, followed by Warner Chabot.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Rod Fujita, a marine ecologist with Environmental Defense. Thank you for this opportunity to comment. Let me first commend the Ocean Protection Council and your staff at the Coastal Conservancy and your own staff on really doing an exceptional job with both the process of the strategic plan development, which was fully participatory, and on an excellent product. I want to mention that the process that you implemented excited so many people that we were able to forge an unprecedented consensus set of comments from the Fishing Heritage Group, which is a group of Central California harbor masters, environmentalists, commercial fishermen, community members, an odd alliance, surely, but we were able to get it together to send you our comments. That was a big watershed in that group's evolution. Secondly, the product is an excellent balance It achieves that difficult balance in the strategic plan between a high level and inspiring vision and achievable objectives and good principles and criteria to make sure that the Ocean Protection Council's projects add value to the totality of really good efforts that are underway here in this state to protect the ocean and also the economic activities that depend on good ocean resources. This council has a unique capacity given the high-level membership from the EPA, from the Resources Agency, from the Coastal State Lands Commission, and from your legislative members to solve really tough problems that might otherwise fall through the cracks due to jurisdictional conflicts, due to a need for more oversight from a high-level body. And it seemed to me, listening to the public comment earlier this morning, that you've got before you a project that may qualify as one of these high value-added projects. This issue, I just learned about it today, don't know the details, but the issue of coastal development being facilitated by the addition of water infrastructure and the failure to build enough capacity to handle the secondary impacts of that kind of development is an ongoing issue in this state and around the country. And if it, well, I would recommend that you really fully investigate that issue. It seems to comport with the principles of ecosystem-based management in that it's a potential a coordination issue between agencies with different jurisdictions. And it also seems to be fully aligned with the ecosystem-based management project you've supported and is underway in the Morro Bay watershed and coastal zone. I also had an idea that I want to suggest to you. Given that excellent piece of public comment this morning, I thought it might be useful to consider agendizing a time for the public to bring forward ideas like that, to think about the criteria and the principles that you are about to adopt in your strategic plan, and bring before you a project like that that seems to hit on all the cylinders, that is a cross-jurisdictional problem, that is a regulatory logjam, that requires the high-level input from the heads of these three very important research agencies to solve. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rod. Appreciate that. Warner?
I fear I might get accused of piling on at this sort of love fest on the strategic plan, but
keep it coming.
Having said that,
that's right.
I do, on behalf of the Ocean Conservancy, I do want to add our comments also to both compliment you, the Conservancy staff, and the Resources Agency staff on what I think was a extraordinarily open and inclusive process to try to develop a rather complex document over a very tight time frame. We also want to acknowledge that the Ocean Protection Council, frankly, is still evolving, that the range of potential issues for you to address is almost infinite, and that, therefore, producing a strategic plan that sets forth an overarching vision, strategy, and specific measurable goals is a very difficult task. I believe that the draft of this plan that you have has shown significant improvements as a result of each of the many meetings that open meetings that you conducted and drafts that you made available to the public. The Ocean Conservancy does support adoption today of this strategic plan. We ask, however, that you approve this plan, that as you approve the plan, you also acknowledge that it is a living document that is subject to update and revision. So as the Ocean Protection Council evolves and your set of priorities and recognition of what you can do evolves, so does the specifics in the Ocean Protection Plan, and its priorities reflect that. We have at least one area, specific areas, where we hope that the plan will evolve, and that's in the rather difficult task of measurable goals. Your plan does have six themes, each with a specific goal and one or two performance measures that try to quantify an outcome by which the Ocean Protection Council hopes to have a measurable achievement in 5 years. I've taken those six goals and the performance measures, and I just put them down on one page, and I want to show you one thing related.
Warner, if you give it to the AGP video guys, we can project it.
Here we go.
If it works.
If it works, okay.
You have six goals, and each goal has one or two measurable performance measures. I think ultimately and politically, the success of the Ocean Protection Council will be far more successful when you, Linda, Mike, Cindy, Steve Wesley, are able, frankly, to give the 30-second elevator speech that says what is it that the Ocean Protection Council wants to achieve in the next five years. I think that your measurable goals and performance measures are the core of that. I highlighted your ocean water quality performance measures because I think more than any of your six goals, those two measures are both ambitious and specific. You talk about trying to reduce the number of beach closures by 75% over the next 5 years and to reduce the amount of marine debris on California's beaches by 50%. That is extraordinarily ambitious, but it's the type of, I think, far-reaching goal that you should try to achieve. I believe the other six goals, if you look at the performance measures, they're a little more vague and fuzzy and a little hard they're not as specific as that. I admit that in these issues of ecosystem-based management, trying to come up with specific measurable results is tough. We, even as the advocates in meetings with you, have had a difficult time to do that, and I'm not sure we have given you as much good material that I think you need to do that. So I think the public is as responsible as possible. But I do ask that as you look at this plan and try to evolve it, you think about, are there ways of actually putting some targeted, measurable results so that people have something to really grasp for, and so that as you progress, when you're 2 years towards this five-year goal, you'll know whether you're there or not, or moving in that direction. That's just my one area where I think that this is, A, an excellent document, but in that area, I think it might be one area that's worthy of coming back and taking a look at in the future. Thank you.
Great, Warner. Thank you. As always, really appreciate the input. Any other requests to speak on this item, Sam? Okay. First of all, let me say thank you. Everybody said thank you. I'll say thank you again to everybody who's been involved in this. We are at a point in our deliberations where we need to, from my perspective, and I'm going to ask the other members to comment also, if you'd like to, please, before we move to take an action. From my perspective, this particular strategic plan, as should all strategic plans, be dynamic and living documents. This one will be. I guarantee you all. You all suggested that. We have been very deliberative in our outreach and involvement efforts, as you all have acknowledged, those of you who have been involved in it, to make sure we maximize the input. The document clearly has gotten better over time. And it will get better over time as we move through the actual implementation of the strategic plan. We're gonna suggest a review process on an ongoing basis. We're not quite sure how we're going to, I mean, the timing of that yet, but soon we'll begin we've heard some suggestions today on how to improve it. We're going to want to take those under advisement. We're going to want to create a process for getting to that in a reasonable period of time. We also want to make clear that as we move to implement some of these very ambitious goals and objectives, we're obviously going to want to agendize them over time to kind of bring everybody up to speed on where we are, how we're doing, trying to get some comments from you. You'll hear me say this: keep our feet to the fire on this in this process, because this will be a mutual effort. It's driven by changing climates, if you will, political climates, fiscal climates, priorities as we move through these issues. So this is an effort that's going to take a lot of ongoing work on all of our part to make sure that we get this right as we move through these conversations. Anything else?
Yes, Linda? Mr. Chairman, I would just like to congratulate the council, the staff, and the stakeholders for all their work. And I'm sorry I wasn't here earlier to help on that, but it's nice to walk in and have a fantastic product in front of me. I think the comments today were very constructive, and the chairman's commitment to a living document is very important. Tremendous effort, and I look forward to implementing the plan.
Thank you, Linda. Cindy, anything?
Thank you, Secretary.
The strategic plan, which I know staff has been working on for such a long time, is a good and substantial document, and the controller appreciates the conservancy staff's very, very hard work, and even more appreciates that the process has been very open, transparent, and participatory, involving all the stakeholders. The document has really come a long way from its beginnings as a draft when we saw that. It's more action-oriented, it's better structured, and very pleased with it and appreciate all of the hard work. I would support adoption of the plan today with the caveat that has been oft mentioned today that this is a living document that could and should be improved and upgraded. There were some very specific comments made today by the representative from Oceana concerning scientist input section being removed, and also concerning bottom trawling by Linda Sheehan concerning the ecosystem-based management and how that process will occur, and with respect to enforcement and integration across agencies and putting it on the web, and also Mr. Curlin's comments from Defenders of Wildlife wanting us to consider Dr. Jessup's later today comments input. And finally, Mr. Chabot's important comments about having A, B, and D through F being as strong and measurable and targeted as C, the ocean and coastal water quality section. So I'd be interested if the other members would consider approving this today, but also directing staff to just those very specific areas, working with the specific stakeholders and getting that done in the next week or two without necessity for commission action, and just
week won't be possible. But I mean, I would support your suggestion, but we got to give them some time. I mean, we got to give them a breather a little bit here to kind of take a breath and kind of take a look and try to digest some of this information. But I think that my own opinion would be one of the first orders of business is we review this, begin to review the strategic plan within the next month or two, something like that.
I can make a comment on all three of those comments that came before us. If you look to the encouraged stakeholder participation section of the plan, the bullet 2 talks specifically about convening public workshops before OPC meetings to encourage informal dialogue about the actions. And I think we really ought to take that to heart and probably at the next meeting have a half day or so workshop and focus on the plan and some of these additional ideas and the tweaking, because there will always be this tweaking. But I'd like to also reference something else. California and the World Ocean that's coming up in September is a very different kind of conference. Some of the very large coastal zone conferences are thousands of people, and it's although they try, there tends to be a lot of what I did last summer kinds of presentations, which are fine, but I think that it's important to try to focus. The focus of California and the World Ocean is on this strategic plan. So we have 400 abstracts have been submitted to us. We're going to have Leon Panetta, Admiral James Watkins, Admiral Lautenbacher, Sylvia Earle, leaders from throughout the nation, leaders from throughout California. And when we put out the materials informing people that they've been accepted, we are going to say, please direct your comments and your experiences and your knowledge base to how the strategic plan can work better, or how your ideas can be incorporated into that strategic plan. Since about a third of you out there probably have papers that have come in to us on California and the World Ocean, hopefully you can help spread that message, because it's a really great opportunity to keep this thing alive and to really, really make it work. So I think we've got some good opportunities with this workshop model and with moving forward with this really landmark conference that's coming up.
Okay, thank you, Brian, Cindy, Linda, thank you for the comments, and again, thank you all for this. We're ready for a motion.
I'll go ahead. Go ahead, Linda.
I'd like to move the adoption of the plan.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and Ms. Adams, does your motion include the caveat that we'll be
yes,
continuing
of course.
To work on the
issues
I mentioned?
Absolutely, yes.
I'll second that motion then.
Okay. Thank you.
For the question. Mr. Chairman, for purposes of clarity, can I know exactly what Ms. Ehrenberg is suggesting as a part of the motion?
just the previously mentioned comments that within, not as short as a week, but within a short time frame, that those very specific comments that I mentioned made by the commenters be included in the plan as
maybe coming
as
out
with
of
the stakeholders and staff working together to make that happen.
Be considered for inclusion or be included?
No, be included.
Be considered for inclusion. I think we ought to. I wouldn't agree to be considered because we don't know what's going to be included yet. So I'd at least be considered for inclusion. I think at least, Cindy, are you all right with that?
How about this? How about something be considered for inclusion? Be strongly considered for inclusion,
sure.
And only rejected, you know, on very sound bases, something like that.
I wouldn't support that. I wouldn't support that. What I would support would be considered for inclusion as we go through this very exhaustive public process. There's going to be a lot of information that comes out. There's going to be a lot of things that we want to consider. So don't want to tie our hands, but we've got a process in place, and we'll guarantee a process in place where we're considered as we've considered all the specifics of the plan itself. So I mean, it's continuing in that same vein, it seems to me. But I think we want to provide ourselves, you know, some options here as we move through this ever changing landscape of ocean protection in California. So that's my view.
I'll accept that we'll consider, you know, just strongly consider for inclusion if that's all right with the maker of the motion.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for that clarification.
Okay. Other questions or comments? Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, good. Thank you all very much. Landmark day for us. A lot of work, big effort behind us, a lot of obviously focused efforts ahead of us, and we again appreciate everybody's help. Okay, let's move on. Got strategic plan. The next item is an action item, consideration of the adoption of the California Ocean Observation Program, supporting the state's ocean observation efforts, and to authorize to begin the implementation of the Ocean Science Application Program.
And Sheila Siemens from the Coastal Conservancy staff is going to address this. As you recall, Mike, we presented this to you for action at the last meeting, but
right.
You didn't have a quorum, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Thanks.
We get to do it over again, basically. But now we have Sheila and some other folks here to add to my rather anemic presentation last time.
A little closer to the microphone. I know. I see it's on.
How's this?
Better.
All right. Great. Thanks. I'm pleased to be here today to talk about California's role in ocean observing. Because this is the third time this item's been brought before the board, I'll keep my comments brief, but we'll be happy to answer any questions you have. A brief rundown. Sam sort of already mentioned this, but we first brought this report to you in November of last year. Oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. In September of last year. The first draft of that. Opened it up for public comments after that. Went to a number of different folks that are experts both nationally and within the state to get their opinions on some of the recommendations we had included in this plan. Reworked it, brought it back to you last meeting in April. And as Sam mentioned, there was no quorum, so we're bringing it back to you again today. So basically what we're asking you to do is adopt the recommendations contained in the California Ocean Observing Program report and authorize the Conservancy to begin development of the Ocean Science Applications Program. If you recall from the very first OPC meeting we had, Admiral Watkins was giving a presentation, and one of the questions he was asked was, if you could only do one thing in ocean management, what would it be? And he said ocean observing. And at that time, California had already authorized $21 million to be spent on the California Ocean Currents Program, monitoring program, and your staff's involvement in that has really given us good experience in understanding that these monitoring systems are vital to understanding our oceans. We need they're useful in assessing the status of our oceans, tracking changes over time, both human and anthropogenic, and determining what management strategies we use are being effective. And as Drew mentioned earlier in his presentation on the strategic plan, the ongoing collection and distribution of sound scientific data is a critical element to improving our ocean management. So with your concurrence today, the Conservancy will use the Secretary's delegated authority to contract for services to begin implementation of OSA, as we're calling it now. OSA's three main goals are to assure that new and existing ocean observing programs address the state's management priorities first and foremost, are sustained over time. These are things that we need to put in. This is basic infrastructure that we need to put in, and we need to develop some funding sources over time. And also meet the needs of a broad suite of users and primarily, initially, our resource managers. Our initial activities, based on the fact that we have ocean observing programs going on and we also have policy development going on, include the creation of a needs assessment for ocean observing, working closely with the RAs, the regional associations we have here in California, and other stakeholders. To continue working on data delivery and product development for state-funded ocean observing programs like the Coastal Ocean Currents Monitoring Program, to work both in Sacramento and Washington, D.C., to assure that IUS, or the federal ocean observing program legislation, moves forward, and that California has a very visible part of that. Work with all available partners to identify long-term funding, as I said earlier, for a sustained and integrated ocean observing program in California. And as you'll hear in the next item, we also want to work with the folks that are developing the Marine Protected Areas Monitoring Program to make sure that this is integrated well into the state's ocean observing program. What we intend to do is continue the momentum of creating this program within the Conservancy and then bring to you at another date, hopefully in the near future, a more detailed program. Once we get some services on board to help us out, we'll bring to you a more detailed work program and budget for year one tasks for your approval at that point. So with that, I will conclude and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Well done. Any questions of anybody? Okay. Thank you very much. We have two folks who'd like to speak, Krista Kammer, followed by John Ugaritz. Krista?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Krista Kammer, and I'm here on behalf of CCOR, which is the Center for Integrative Coastal Observation Research and Education, which is the California State University Ocean Observing System. And for one thing, I'm very glad that the state is interested in supporting ocean observing, since a number of the programs in our region are getting by year to year on congressional earmarks. And I do believe that the document as it's written now is inclusive of a number of ocean observing activities within the state. I just noticed that several of the, OSA? Is that right? OSA. Initial priorities and tasks are very specific to the Coastal Ocean Currents Monitoring Program, COCMP. And I wanted to take this opportunity to remind the council and the staff and the public that's here of the importance of the other ocean observing programs within the state, and that it's the existence of these programs and the oceanographic and meteorological data that they collect that allows COCMP to focus heavily on currents using high-frequency radar. The success of these other ocean observing programs, I believe, is integral to the success of the COCMP program. And I believe that the overall goals of the state supporting ocean observing systems do include this number of regional systems and ensuring sustained funding for them. It's just that during the initial task, while OSA spins up, I'd like to point out that I think that the staff needs to be cognizant of these other programs and their needs as well for sustained funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Krista. Appreciate you being here. John Ugaritz. Yeah, I'm sorry. John. Yes. John. Hi.
Good morning, Mr.
Good
Secretary,
morning.
Council members. John Ugaritz. I am the Nearshore Ecosystem Coordinator with California Department of Fish and Game's Marine Region. And first off, just would like to say that the department agrees that an overarching coordination entity is necessary to have a truly effective ocean observing system in California, and that the Ocean Protection Council is an appropriate group to help oversee and organize coordination efforts, and we appreciate you and your staff's efforts to do so already. We would like to make one comment regarding that in general, California's ocean observing groups, the USAs, the SENCUSAs and SCUSAs and all the other USAs, give little priority to nearshore biological monitoring, and that part of a truly coordinated ocean observing system is a focus that connects both biological and physical oceanography, and they're key to the long-term management of resources, which is our main goal. examples of some programs or a program that connects physical oceanographic processes to biological monitoring in the nearshore environment would be the Channel Islands National Parks kelp forest monitoring. They actually collect data and have for many years on the subtidal ocean water temperatures on their sites. They have a long-term database of ocean water temperature in connection with their observations on biological processes and species. So we think that making sure that those processes and the biological part of ocean observing is included is important as we move forward with this plan. And we also just would like to say that we're very willing to work with you on this and hope to continue to coordinate efforts with you. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. That's it for the speaker cards. Okay. Yes.
Make one quick point. Sorry. I know this is
sort of... No, it's all right.
I just wanted to... I appreciate what Krista was saying, and I just wanted to make a quick point about that. We definitely understand that there's a lot of ocean observing programs going on in the state and that they're very valuable, but the point I wanted to make is that the Coastal Ocean Currents Monitoring Program is given specific emphasis in this report because it's a state-funded, very well state-funded, $21 million project that was funded through bond funds that have a five-year life. And after that, there's no funding currently identified to sustain this program over time and develop products that will be useful for management purposes. So this is actually one of the main priorities we have in the short term to make sure that the investment California put into this program is useful in the long term. So that's why that was given that kind of emphasis. Great. In the report. But definitely that data combined with all the other data that we have going on in the state will be critical to ocean management.
Great, Sheila. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add to that. I mean, I mm-hmm. think at the staff level we embrace both of the comments, and we're painfully aware of the fact that the state's existing monitoring systems are chaotically funded, let's say, often held together by, you know, spit and baling wire. And that's something that we think is very important to address. And we also know that, in fact, to be of use to resource managers, we need to relatively quickly figure out how to move into the biological monitoring side of things as opposed to the physical oceanographic side of things. And, in fact, we've already had a discussion with some folks at Scripps who might be able to help us in the long term come up with some better, faster, cheaper ways of monitoring the biological data that the resource managers need, because historically the biological monitoring is sort of on a per unit of data basis more expensive than some of the physical oceanographic stuff. So
sure.
we embrace both comments, and we hope to be able to work on those things.
Great. Yeah, we did. The governor did a letter to Congress. I don't know when, Brian. What, a couple months ago, urging additional funding for these observation programs. So we certainly agree that it's a very high priority. Comments from the council members? Anything, Cindy? Okay, we're ready for a motion then to adopt adopt the California Ocean Observing Program. And authorize the beginning implementation of the Ocean Science Application Program.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Thank you. Further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you. Okay. Thank you for that. Next on the agenda, we'll do this one. See, it's 11:20. I think we'll do this, and we'll break for lunch after this agenda item. Next on the agenda is consideration of possible adoption of marine protected area monitoring design principles.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello. Good morning, Chairman Chrisman, members of the council. My name is Marina Cazorla. I'd like to begin by reminding you that at the last OPC meeting in April, Sam Shookett updated you on the status of the MLPA process and the need to come up with a monitoring program for the state as it moves forward, creating a statewide marine protected area network. Staff were directed at that meeting in April to come back to you with various items to support MPA monitoring, including design principles, a work plan, budget, and monitoring protocols. This MPA monitoring memo before you is the first item to come back to you in support of that request. At the April meeting and in the attached support letter, we were also specifically requested by Fish and Game that the OPC provide leadership on MPA monitoring. And indeed, John Ugaritz, who is the MLPA coordinator at Fish and Game, as you know, is here today, and he's also here if you want to ask any questions about this memo. And in terms of a time frame, we plan on coming back to you in the fall with an actual work plan and proposal for monitoring, but at this point, we'd like to present you with these general monitoring principles. With that, I'd like to introduce Mike Weber, who's been working with Fish and Game staff during the MPA process. He's going to outline these proposed design principles for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. My name is Mike Weber, Resources Legacy Fund Foundation. Mr. Chairman, council members, I'd like to give you a little bit of background on the principles.
Put the microphone.
But let me first start by noting happily that the strategic plan that you just accepted for the ocean science applications includes MLPA monitoring as one of four priority areas from the outset. And I think the MLPA provides a good focus for bringing data from variety of streams, existing and new streams, and really applying them to real integrated management at an ecosystem level. The principles that you have before you are intended really to provide some guidance in the development of the work plan so that staff has some idea of what general principles they should be using in developing this work plan that you should be seeing in the fall. I'll just run through those quickly. They're presented about halfway through the memo. The first is that any monitoring program developed for the MLPA or for MPAs should support ecosystem-based management and adaptive management. And, of course, your strategic plan emphasizes the same thing, and this reemphasizes that. And that is that the monitoring should make it possible to evaluate the impacts of management actions, should develop knowledge about marine ecosystems, should help identify emerging threats, and should determine the extent to which the goals and objectives of MPAs and for ecosystems are being met. The second major principle has to do with integration with existing statewide monitoring programs and ocean observing systems, and this may seem obvious, but it's something that doesn't happen automatically. And this simply calls out that in the design of the MPA monitoring program, that there be an effort to link up with the other programs that are already underway, and in particular, that it should draw upon existing protocols, such as the protocol that was developed by CRANE, the Cooperative Resource Assessment of Nearshore Ecosystems program, and should conform to data management and communication standards that have already been established more broadly. Another principle has to do with the institutional roles of a monitoring enterprise, and that includes leadership and coordination, basically making things happen, and also being sure to coordinate with other monitoring programs and with decision makers. It needs to be undergirded by good science, both in the design of monitoring programs and developing research in order to refine our understanding of marine ecosystems. A very important component is information technology and data management, and oftentimes this isn't really built into the system early on. The information is collected, and then the question is, well, now what? What do we do with this? Where do we put it? How do people get the information? And so an important aspect of this is to really design that from the outset. And finally, another piece that often gets missed is communication of the results. And that's communication not simply back to those who are doing the monitoring and the science, but to decision makers and to the public. It's critical that any monitoring program be credible and that it be accessible. And in terms of credibility, it needs to be useful to decision makers. This isn't monitoring for monitoring's sake or for simply collecting data. And it needs to be, on the one hand, stable enough with a long enough stream of funding to be reliable, but it also needs to be agile. As in other aspects of marine and coastal management, monitoring is a changing field. The technology changes dramatically. We wouldn't have been talking about the radar system we now have 5 or 10 years ago. So we need to be staying on top of that. So that's basically the background for the principles here. And as I mentioned earlier on, they were really developed with a view to helping develop the work plan. They reflect a lot of a review of about a dozen different ecosystem-based monitoring programs around the country, and we hope they're useful.
Hey, Mike. So, thank you. Questions. Good work. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay. Thank you. All right. We've got a couple of folks who'd like to speak. First, John Ugaritz, followed by Warner Chabot. John?
Thank you again, Mr. Crispin. As noted in the department's May 23rd letter, we continue to support your efforts to coordinate and prioritize monitoring programs, in particular with regards to marine protected areas. And your staff have done an excellent job of identifying key institutional functions for coordinating a monitoring program. We applaud them on that. I'd like to highlight a critical gap in current marine protected area monitoring that is mentioned in your staff's report on ocean observing systems. And that is fixed gear surveys, including trap and other fixed gear catch per unit effort surveys. These studies are important in helping to determine both the positive and potential negative impacts of marine protected areas on both fish stocks and on fishermen. This is particularly true for cryptic species, including those like cabezon, which are not well measured by dive surveys or other visual survey methodologies and are a vital part of our nearshore fishery. The department looks forward to continued close cooperation with you and your staff as a statewide plan is developed. And again, the council's role in coordination and support of monitoring will help the department fulfill our role as a resource management agency. Thank you.
Good, John. Thanks. Warner?
Very briefly, the Ocean Protection Council, the Ocean Conservancy does support this document. I think if there is and urges its adoption, I think if there is anything that you might call a Mike Crismanism in relation to MPAs, it's that you don't establish MPAs unless you have a program to figure out how to monitor and manage them.
That's
I think
right.
Moving down this road helps meet the Mike Crismanism rule of developing the monitoring programs that we do need to make sure that we're doing both simultaneously. Thank you.
Thanks, Warner. Appreciate that. Comments? Anything else? Any other public comments? Okay. Comments?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I just have a question. I see in the background that apparently we have $2 million reserved for this monitoring, and I'm curious about what the funding source is. Is that bond money, or what is that? Where did that come from?
That's Tidelands oil funds that the council reserved at its last meeting to be able to spend on what you come up with or what we propose to you operationally, maybe at your next meeting in September, but more likely at the meeting after that.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I will move adoption of the resolution.
Is there a
second?
Okay. Further discussion or comments? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Well, you know, I indicated before this last item started that that we would probably break for lunch, and I think because it was MLP, I was sure we're going to go over for an hour and a half. Usually, we do in this item, but I tell you what, we're gonna break for lunch now. We're a little early. It's 11:30. That'll give us time to get back maybe by no later than 1:45. We can start our meeting if we could. I'm reminded that that probably the best place to have lunch is here at the Hyatt, the cafe, the Monterey Cafe here at the Hyatt. It'd be faster for lunch when we get back here. Probably about we'll start about 1:45. So thanks. See you 1:45.